the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED. Today, we're talking about lower gastrointestinal bleeding. This is defined as bleeding distal to the ligament of trites. It's a very common condition. There are over 110,000 admissions and over 270,000 ED visits just in the U.S. every year. There are a bunch of different etiologies. There's anatomic, like diverticular bleeding, vascular, like angiodysplasia or ischemic. There's inflammatory causes, like inflammatory bowel disease or infectious colitis, and also neoplastic. Diverticular bleeding is the most common etiology overall. Hemorrhoids are more common in those less than 50 years, and vascular causes are more common in those over 65 years. Up to 85% of cases will resolve with no intervention. But rebleeding can occur in up to 40% of patients within 1 year, and about a quarter of patients will require blood product transfusion. Mortality rates can even reach 4% in patients who are admitted. We're going to look at a couple ways that we can improve how we care for these patients. Our first point is how these patients present. Most patients will present with hematochezia or bright red blood per rectum, but it isn't always that easy. Up to 15% of patients with severe hematochezia will actually have an upper GI source, and technically a lower GI bleed can present with melena if the source is more proximal. So are there any findings that can differentiate a lower GI bleed from an upper GI bleed? The major factors that point toward a lower GI bleed is a history of lower GI bleeding that has a positive likelihood ratio of 6 and the presence of blood clots per rectum that has a positive likelihood ratio of 20. The factors associated with upper GI bleeding include a history of prior upper GI bleed that has a positive likelihood ratio of 6, patient-reported melena that has a positive likelihood ratio of over 5, melena on your exam that has a positive likelihood ratio of over 25, age less than 50 years that has a positive likelihood ratio of 4, history of peptic ulcer disease or decompensated liver disease that has a positive likelihood ratio of 6, and a BUN to creatinine ratio of over 30, that has a positive likelihood ratio of over 7. You also need to think about upper GI bleeding in patients who are toxic or unstable, or if they have a significant amount of rectal bleeding. Let's get to the evaluation, and specifically when to image and what modality. Imaging can help, but it's not just your normal run-of-the-mill CT. CTA is the way to go if you're going to get imaging. It has a sensitivity and specificity over 90% if the patient is actively bleeding. The big issue here is that you probably don't need CTA in all patients with lower GI bleeding. So when should you order this test? The 2023 American College of Gastroenterology Guidelines and the British Society of Gastroenterology Guidelines both recommend getting CTA in patients with hemodynamically significant lower GI bleeding. They give the example of a shock index over 1 or if there's evidence of poor systemic perfusion. In other patients who are stable and that bleeding has resolved, CTA is of low yield and will most likely not really help you. If you are going to get the CTA and the bleeding is severe, first resuscitate and speak with your IR colleagues and the radiologist. You'll also want to speak to your surgeons too. We'll talk about why that's important in a minute, but ask for multi-phase imaging. That will be a non-contrast CT, venous phase imaging, and then arterial phase imaging, and get it while the patient is bleeding. This is going to increase the diagnostic capability, and it can help guide further management with embolization If you see extravasation, don't use oral contrast here. You won't be able to visualize any extravasation. If this CTA is negative, the likelihood of spontaneous resolution is high, and there's a lower risk of rebleeding. The take-home point here is that if the patient is critically ill, they have severe bleeding, then speak with IR, talk with surgery, and get the CTA. If they're not critically ill, they don't have severe bleeding, then further radiologic studies probably aren't going to help you. What about management? Well, first we need to talk about blood product transfusion. If the patient has significant bleeding and is unstable, transfuse blood. Now, the 2023 ACG guidelines recommend IV fluid first, but that's not what the patient is losing. They need blood. It's not as straightforward in other patients with lower GI bleeding. If the patient is stable, multiple studies and guidelines recommend using a transfusion threshold of 7 grams per deciliter for hemoglobin. That includes the Association for the Advancement of Blood and Biotherapies. If the patient has mild cardiac ischemia or a cardiac history, then you can think about using a transfusion threshold of 8 grams per deciliter. The problem is that most of these recommendations are based on studies using upper GI bleeding, not lower GI bleeding. There is a post hoc analysis of patients with lower GI bleeding. They compared a liberal transfusion threshold of 9 grams per deciliter with a restrictive strategy and found no difference in in-hospital mortality. When it comes to platelets, there's even more limited evidence. Guidelines recommend platelet transfusion for patients with severe lower GI bleeding and a platelet count less than 30,000. They recommend a higher threshold of 50,000 if endoscopy is necessary. These same ACG guidelines from 2023 also recommend against transfusing platelets to reverse an antiplatelet agent. One study in patients on antiplatelet agents with active lower GI bleeding, but who were not thrombocytopenic, found increased mortality and no reduction in rebleeding with platelet transfusion. The take-home point here is that we don't have great evidence specifically in lower GI bleeding. If they're critically ill, they have severe bleeding, then give them blood products. Otherwise, guidelines recommend a hemoglobin threshold of 7 grams per deciliter and 30,000 for platelets in most patients. Next, let's get to reversal of anticoagulants. Let's face it, many patients with lower GI bleeding will be on some form of an anticoagulant. These patients may need reversal based on their hemodynamic status, the severity of their bleeding, lab testing, and the timing of diagnostic and interventional procedures. If the patient has minor bleeding, it's resolved, they don't need reversal. If the bleeding is severe, you need to reverse, but it's going to depend on the agent. For vitamin K antagonists like warfarin, use vitamin K plus PCCs. You can use FFP, but PCCs are more effective, and that's based on multiple studies. DOACs are a bit more controversial. In a patient on a DOAC who comes in with minor bleeding, it's resolved, they don't need reversal. That patient can actually continue the DOAC. If the bleeding is more significant, but the patient is otherwise stable, then the medication can be held without reversal. The anticoagulant effect will dissipate after around 24 hours. In other patients with severe bleeding, PCCs are the way to go. I am going to differ from some of the guidelines here, but there's really no clear improvement with idarucizumab or adnexinant alpha on patient-oriented outcomes. What about the ever-popular TXA? Several studies have found no benefit in patient-oriented outcomes with TXA in patients with significant lower GI bleeding. There's also the risk of VTE and seizures. Ultimately, the 2023 ACG guidelines recommend against using IV TXA. The key here is to base reversal on the patient hemodynamics and the severity of bleeding. Use PCCs for DOACs and just say no to IVTXA in patients with lower GI bleeding. How about colonoscopy and other interventions to help control bleeding? Colonoscopy is the diagnostic and treatment modality of choice. It can diagnose the cause and provide bleeding control. If the patient is admitted, guidelines recommend colonoscopy at some point during the inpatient stay. This is not needed emergently, though, in stable patients per the current literature. Studies have not shown improved outcomes, including mortality, with colonoscopy performed within 24 hours. Plus, the 2023 ACG guidelines recommend non-emergent colonoscopy for admitted patients with lower GI bleeding. These guidelines do state that colonoscopy may be performed within 24 hours in patients who are at high risk of bleeding and they have a high pretest probability of finding a source of bleeding. The example the guidelines use is post-polypectomy bleeding. Also, according to the guidelines, not all patients need colonoscopy. The 2023 guidelines state that colonoscopy may not be needed if the bleeding has subsided and the patient has had a high-quality colonoscopy and adequate bowel preparation within 12 months showing diverticulosis and no colorectal neoplasia. What about the patient with severe bleeding? That's not the time for colonoscopy. If the patient has severe bleeding and they're unstable, resuscitate and get them to CTA. Colonoscopy is not going to help them in this situation. The specialist won't be able to visualize the bleeding source, and the patient still needs a bowel prep. If the CTA is negative, they do need a colonoscopy, but an upper endoscopy should be performed first to look for an upper GI bleed. Like we talked about earlier, if the CTA shows extravasation, embolization can control the bleeding in over 95% of cases, but the earlier the better. That's why you need to talk with IR and radiology up front if you're concerned about the patient. Angiography and embolization performed within 90 minutes of the CTA increases the chance of controlling the bleeding by up to ninefold. If the embolization doesn't work and the patient is still having severe bleeding, laparotomy might be the next step. That's why you need to speak with your surgical specialist up front. The take-home point here is that colonoscopy is the go-to in most admitted patients with lower GI bleeding, but it doesn't need to be performed within 24 hours in most patients. If they're sick, resuscitate and get the CTA first. Let's finish with disposition. Not all patients will need to be admitted. There are multiple decision tools that are available for determining the risk of adverse events and helping with disposition in patients with lower GI bleeding. These scores include the bleed score, no blads, the Oakland score, the shape 2 score, and the straight score. The Oakland score is recommended by multiple guidelines. These include the British, European, and American guidelines. The Oakland score includes age, sex, history of lower GI bleeding, digital rectal exam findings, heart rate, systolic blood pressure, and hemoglobin. An Oakland score of 8 or less has a 95% probability in predicting safe discharge. One study found a score of 8 or less points had a sensitivity of 98% for safe discharge, and a score of 10 or less points had a sensitivity of 96%. A meta-analysis published in 2023 that compared a bunch of different scores for lower GI bleeding found the Oakland score was the best at predicting safe discharge, major bleeding, and the need for blood product transfusion. The key here is to not use a score in isolation. These scores can help, especially to admit the patient that you're concerned about, and let's say they have a higher score, but the medicine team does not want to admit the patient. Now, if you're thinking about discharge, only use the score as a supplement to your decision-making. You need to think about other factors, the rate and severity of the bleeding, if the patient has had recurrent bleeding in the ED, their social factors, other comorbidities, and symptoms like severe fatigue or dyspnea, and finally, their ability to follow up. When it comes to scores, the Oakland score is promising, but it needs prospective validation in the ED setting. Don't use these scores as a replacement for your bedside assessment. That's it on lower GI bleeding. We talked about presentation and differentiating lower GI bleeding and upper GI bleeding. For imaging, go with CTA in patients who are toxic or if they have severe bleeding. We covered transfusion thresholds and when to reverse anticoagulation. Finally, we talked about colonoscopy and disposition with the current available scores. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.